This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, it's the evening edition with Lee Chui Lin and Kelvin Yee.
First up this hour, we're trying to understand the movement from a trade body in India to boycott Malaysian palm oil in light of comments made by Tun M about Kashmir and Jammu. So you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are, however, going to be moving on to our next story after this, which is the subject of the relationship between India and Malaysia and how it's not at its highest peak at the moment. So we're trying to understand why that is. That's coming your way after this. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's 7:12. You're listening to the evening edition with Kelvin and Lin. Now, we are going to talk about India, Malaysia and palm oil. So now it's sort of an ever-evolving affair. Last week, a trade body in India representing oil seed crushers asked its members not to import Malaysian palm oil. This is over Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad's remarks on Kashmir. In his speech at the United Nations General Assembly last month, Tun N said, despite the UN resolution on Jammu and Kashmir, the region had been invaded and occupied.
Yeah, he also said that he wants to see India and Pakistan working together within the context of the UN in order to solve this. And so I think I say that only to provide context for why it is that people are upset, because there are multiple entry points to this for people who have really kind of taken ill with these comments. So it sparked angry reactions from social media users in India. They, in fact, started the hashtag Boycott Malaysia. But just today, a political body in South India actually urged Prime Minister Narendra Modi not to reduce palm oil imports because the Tamil Nadu Congress Committee said that if an official boycott took place, it would hurt migrant workers from Tamil Nadu. So far, there has not been any notice from the Indian government about a boycott. Instead, this is all coming from a trade body.
Yeah, so I think that's been quite an interesting one so far, simply because I just wonder how then the government will respond, seeing that there is some amount of public pressure towards the government to introduce at least some form of boycott or reducing imports of Malaysian palm oil, because they know, and I'm guessing that they just know how to where to hit us, essentially.
Sure. I think that that's really an important question to try and get at, because of course India is, I think, the third largest importer of palm oil from Malaysia, and so this is clearly an issue. But that leads me to wonder a little bit about how differently we deal with countries like China and India, because we speak very often about our balancing act when it comes to China and the United States, how we don't want to make anybody angry, we don't want to
we're friends with everyone,
and that comes to play even when we might not feel very friendly about their actions.
Yeah.
And so we don't use words like invade when it comes to talking about China. Of course, there's nothing to say yet in that area. But nevertheless, our language when it comes to China is a lot softer.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious about that, because we talk about the size of China's economy, but India's a huge economy too and a big trading partner. So I would think there's also a need to... it's just, if this is your general statement that you're trying to be friends with everybody, this is also important, no?
Yeah, to account for how perhaps the Indian government might also feel. Now, to understand this a bit more, joining us on the line is Thomas Daniel, Senior Analyst in the Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program of ISIS Malaysia. Thomas, thanks so much for being on the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how would you describe the relationship between Malaysia and India on a trading and diplomatic level?
Well, it's a very old relationship. India was one of our first diplomatic partners. Relationship is going back to 1957 when we achieved independence. It's a relationship that has, as with all diplomatic relationships, it really evolves slowly. It ebbs and it goes. But the relationship has been relatively stable. It's been a relatively good relationship throughout these years, and it's now, the bilateral relationship is one that is really based on trade between Malaysia and India.
Right. And if we were to go back to where this particular bit of tension began, I mean, it happened at the UN. Can you tell us, perhaps, give us some background as to why Tun M's statement was as controversial in India as it was? I mean, I think for this, probably we need some background into the very long-running tensions in that particular region.
Oh, yes. That is a very, very long background. Essentially, the bulk of tensions in South Asia, especially between India and Pakistan, are centered around the dispute around Kashmir, on really who controls Kashmir and what was the intention of the Kashmiri ruler and the Kashmiri people back in 1948, when they moved towards independence. Now, each side has a rather unique version of who should have rightful legal control of Kashmir. But I think my understanding is that most Kashmiris themselves feel that their narratives have disappeared entirely and are entirely consumed by what's stated by India and Pakistan. With that being said, traditionally, Malaysia has been relatively balanced when it comes to engaging both India and Pakistan on Kashmir. We have adopted the tone of having them to refer to the various statements and the various pledges made by various UN Security Council resolutions, and urging both India and Pakistan to respect that and adopt it. So as to what happened in the UN, if you ask me personally, I think what really got them going was the choice of words that Mahathir used. If I'm not mistaken, what he said was, he used the word invaded and occupied Muslim majority Kashmir. I think that really, really got them going. And, it sort of produced the sort of backlash that you see. But there are, it's something that's been building up as well. If I can go back to how the relationship between Malaysia and India has evolved or is evolving over the last few years, I think really domestic politics, both in India and Malaysia, has increasingly been coloring that relationship. Not at an official level, but at least on the scale of the sort of dialogue and the narratives that most people are having. So, generally people can point to the Zakir Naik issue as one, but now you've got Kashmir as another. And so you have Malaysians and Indians being very vocal on social media against each other. And these undoubtedly will factor into the calculations of the politicians who make decisions.
Now, we were talking about this earlier because there has been some difference in terms of how we engage with China on issues surrounding human rights and sovereignty. We've, I think, taken a bit of a softer touch compared to the stronger tone that was taken regarding this issue that really is a known sore spot for India. What explains this difference in approach, especially since, India is also a large economy and also an important trading partner for us?
Two things. First, I would argue that while India is a major economy and a trading partner, when it comes to the scale, we have a lot more trade with countries in the Asia Pacific or in East Asia and in Southeast Asia when compared to India. Really, one of the issues of the Malaysia-India bilateral is not so much what we have achieved, but really what more we could have achieved, and that's quite a bit on that, but it's an entirely separate story. So perhaps we feel that the Prime Minister feels that he might be able to risk a bit more when it comes to statements on India, on Kashmir. The second issue really has to do with China and how China is absolutely has absolutely no problem when it comes to using rather punitive trade and diplomatic means to express its displeasure. I would argue that really, it has never done that against Malaysia, but it has done that against other countries in Southeast Asia. And I would argue that really policymakers here, political policymakers, civil servants, people from the business community, they look at this and they are really afraid of the what ifs. What if Malaysian goods are suddenly delayed at a port by about 2 to 3 hours because they need to undergo some sort of extra customs inspections? I think these things really play havoc in the minds of some policymakers here.
So we have this comment here from Jonathan that says that typically contracts are tied down 2 to 3 months forward. We will see the impact only from January next year. It's going to hurt our exports as India domestically can source from Indonesia. Now, just on this subject, how much influence can a trade body exert in a situation like this?
If I were to hazard a guess, it can exert some influence on its members. But again, I think this is something that that at least the Ministry of Primary Industries is taking quite seriously. But again, as some analysts point out, there is no official Indian government statement on this. Although I would also find it hard to believe that this is happening without some sort of tacit approval by some policymaker, perhaps in Delhi. I think time will really tell how much influence this can have and what the impact will be.
You know, we've spent a lot of time on our show this week looking at trade wars and looking at tariffs and things like that and, you know, sort of mulling over whether or not this is going to be the way forward. And I know that it is not new, but perhaps it's just in the news cycle an awful lot more lately. So do you think that these sorts of situations, these sorts of bans or embargoes or tariffs are going to become the norm for countries who are at odds with one another? And also, how often, you know, are we really kind of seeing, in a sense, power of the people? Might it arise from different sources than we traditionally think of?
Ooh, okay. Well, I'll take, I think, what I think is the first part of your question first,
sure.
You know, the use of trade. Well, trade has always been used as a political bargaining tool in diplomacy. But I think right now what we're seeing is trade is really being utilized a lot more pointedly. It's been done a lot more openly. You have political leaders who are saying outright in the open that they are going to, you know, impose sanctions or withhold trade or delay certain legislation if they don't get this from their partners. Things like this might have been uttered perhaps, behind closed doors, but you see them a lot more openly now. I don't think it's anything new, but we are definitely perhaps seeing this being wielded a lot more publicly now. On the second part, on the influence of people power, right? When it comes to, you might have to repeat that again.
Sure.
I think I lost it.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, I was just thinking about the fact that this was really born on social media, right? Like the fact that people took issue with what Tun Mahathir said and then went online, started a Boycott Malaysia campaign, and then we've had people commenting. I suppose, like you said, in the past, these things were behind closed doors, but also the internet just wasn't as prevalent. I mean, how does that change the game?
Well, I think it definitely changes the game. In some societies or in some countries where really policymaking wasn't as open or as accessible as it used to be, these rules are changing. In Malaysia, for example, I think, especially in terms of foreign policy, I think the days of, you know, foreign of policymakers being able to really craft a foreign policy without having too much of feedback from the electorate, for example, is those days, if they're not ended, they are definitely ending. And these really can bring challenges because sometimes, you know, the sort of narratives that we tell Malaysians are not exactly the same narratives that we practice when we deal with other countries. And so it's going to be very challenging, I think, as policymakers have to sort of figure out how to deal with this.
How do you foresee the situation developing in the coming weeks?
With regards to this proposed boycott of palm oil?
Yes.
Well, I think really what needs to be done is, again, the government needs to really ascertain if this boycott will have an effect and really if it's going to get any sort of official blessing from India. If it does, then we might have a problem, at least in the palm oil sector. But I also understand that really when it comes to exports to India, while palm oil is a significant part of that, it is not the only it's not the only part of our bilateral trade. That there's also an argument being made that really part of why palm oil is being targeted is because there is a trade imbalance for many years between Malaysia and India. We have always exported more than we imported, and I think there is some sort of desire to achieve a bit more parity in this. But really, I think time will tell.
Thomas, thank you so much for weighing in.
No worries. Thank you.
That was Thomas Daniel, Senior Analyst in the Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program of ISIS Malaysia, talking to us about the unofficial Boycott Malaysia's palm oil movement coming from India.
Well, the very ground-driven. Boycott Malaysia move. And I just found like there's so much in there to ponder because we are approaching the stage where, like we said, right, the internet is changing things. The way that countries are relating to one another is also shifting constantly. I remember reading that in the supposed chats that our countries are having, there's talk that perhaps Malaysia is going to have to up certain imports. I think it was sugar. Was it sugar? Raw sugar, as well as bovine meat.
Yes.
And, you know, so we are expected to perhaps try to compensate for what has occurred with that. I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen. It's just when I read that, I thought, it's just some of those things that happen on a state level that we don't always think about.
I guess what's interesting to me about this situation is the fact that it was coming from a ground-up level to use trade essentially as a means of showing their dissatisfaction, that the first move was to go straight to a boycott, right? And I think previously in the past, if you were upset, there would be some other means. You would perhaps criticize the leader, among other things, and instead of just going straight for the trade.
Yes, but we've all been taught a few new tricks now, haven't we?
We have. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.